Donald in the Kitchen talks about food. Donald in the Kitchen talks recipes. Donald in the Kitchen talks about lots of other things on community radio.
The Donald in the Kitchen show is sponsored in part by the Mucky Duck Pub, where pub means community. More information can be found at www.themuckyduckpub.com or from Marcus at telephone number 232-8888.
Welcome to the Donna Lana Kitchen. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
We gather here once a week to talk about food, farming advice, recipes, and opinions. And we gather here around our kitchen table at the studios of KHOI Community Radio in beautiful downtown Ames. And that's Community Radio Station. It's a radio station like no other. It's from the heart. Yes, it is. Well, spring. Despite being rainy and cold out there, spring officially arrived last weekend. I'm glad. It's about time.
Oh, yes. And now we have the April showers at the end of March.
That's okay.
Yeah.
I'm ready. I am ready. Today on the Donna Lana Kitchen Show, we are going to talk about seafood grown at a very unexpected place. Yes, it is. I always like to look up things like that. And also we'll give a little thought to some late winter, spring traditions, a little nod to maple syrup later in the show. Here in the Donna Lana Kitchen, we like to find out where food comes from. Now, believe it or not, shrimp can be found.
Okay, but we can't call it
Iowa.
Can't call it seafood anymore. Then.
Yeah, we have to coin. This is interesting, and we have just the people to tell us about this sort of thing. Joining us at the kitchen table today is Jackson and Sarah Kim Lee. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Good. Well, they have a wonderful new project. They are Iowa farmers. Jackson Kimley is founder and president of Midland Seafood Company, and Sarah Kimley is the strategy manager for Midland Seafood Company. And we're talking alternative livestock today. We are.
Well, so Lana and I paid a visit to your shrimp farm. And it was just fascinating. It's up in Story City in the what used to be an outlet mall. Right. So you're reusing the space much more, hopefully more profitably. So tell us how you got started.
Yeah, so I've been interested in land-based aquaculture and kind of bringing fresh seafood supplies to Iowa for some time. And kind of had some ideas for developing a system that would enable us to produce fresh shrimp in the state of Iowa and really be able to get that to consumers. So we spent a couple of years experimenting and kind of learning about how our systems could work. And kind of that led us to where we're at today, where we're commercializing our systems and starting to get product out to customers.
Now, did any of this ag innovation happened in connection with your education at ISU, or what got you going?
Yeah, so I was always experimenting with things at Iowa State University and got a degree in ag business, but spent time while I was there working on especially lamb production and sales, then worked on a salmon startup that did not come to fruition. And that kind of all led working on those projects and getting involved with all the support systems at Iowa State. That kind of led to where we're at today with Midland Co.
So you moved from salmon to shrimp, and what's the advantage there? Obviously, you've thought this through and done quite a bit of research. Yeah, why shrimp?
Yeah, so maybe Sarah's good to touch on this as well, but when we'd hit on salmon before, that was with a previous technology that we were using that was developed in Europe. When we developed this system that was able to use algae and create a more symbiotic system, shrimp was a really natural fit for what we were doing. And being able to produce these saltwater environments that are really do nicely for shrimp production.
Well, explain to our audience where the algae come in, because I think this is a very innovative part that you should be quite proud of. So yeah. Tell us.
Yeah, so something that we do that's a little bit different is that we use algae to treat the water. So the
wastewater, right?
Yeah, so we have saltwater tanks. And so the key to our business is to be able to reuse that water and to clean it and to provide the optimum environment for the shrimp. What we've developed and what's different than anybody else is that we use algae to treat that water. So, and that turns out to be a really symbiotic and has a lot of advantages on cost and carbon capture and that kind of thing, because shrimp excrete nitrogen, phosphorus, and CO2. These are all the rocket fuel for algae. So algae is able to uptake all those nutrients and then to produce oxygen that can then be pumped back to the shrimp. So it really creates, it's just very symbiotic.
Lana and I were talking about this morning. So, we were talking about the algae thing, and I was pointing out to her, you know, we all remember in the last few years, there have been these headlines about algal blooms in Lake Erie resulting because the nitrogen fertilizer is going into the water systems, and then the algae come in to feed them. But in the case in Lake Erie, it's a very toxic algae. So it's not, you've got a closed system, so you can control, and you must have selected the algae specifically for your system, right? Is that how it works?
Yeah, so we grow multiple species of algae, and a lot of, I guess I kind of think about it like when you have a system, an ecological system where there's too many nutrients, when the algae just grows like crazy, then it dies off. And that's where a lot of there are toxic species of algae, but that's where a lot of the problems come, is where you get these blooms, where you get a ton, and then it dies. For us, we're able to have a consistent amount that is relative to the amount of shrimp in the system. And yes, we're able to control to a certain extent the species, make sure we don't have anything toxic that would hurt them or anything like that. But yeah, and one person, I guess, used kind of an interesting way to think about it. We grow algae in our system so that we can reuse that water so that there's not algae downstream. And I think that's kind of an interesting way to think about it.
Yeah, that's a very good example.
This idea of this is definitely a closed system. You have to understand not just the end product of scooping up the shrimp and marketing it, but you start out with, well, I saw them. They were pretty teeny tiny. Kind of walk us down what we saw. This long, long lineup of pools and pumps. And the shrimp start out pretty small, right?
Yeah, so the shrimp that we get in are 6 to 9 milligrams. So they are really, really tiny. You can barely see them when you put them in the water. They're pretty hard to see. So then from there, so that's in our nursery system. So they spend 1 month in the nursery. When they get to be about 1 gram, we move them to a grow-out system. Just transfer the shrimp over because it's all in the same facility. And then they spend 3 months in that system until they're harvest size.
So 4 months from when you get the, you don't get them as eggs, you get them as already...
What do you call
the baby ones?
So post larvae is the term.
Post larvae. There you go.
We call them babies, though. It's a little bit nicer sounding.
So 4 months till they're ready to harvest, basically.
That's correct.
And the beauty of your system is your harvest actually, it's like you have your own no need to go to the meat locker with them. You take the live animal and you go fully all the way through to packaging, right?
Yeah, I can touch on this. So when we harvest the shrimp, they go into an ice bath that immediately stuns them. And then from there, we can package them. So they're fresh, they're head on, shell on. We don't do any processing, we just do packaging. So we rinse them and then we weigh them and then they go straight into the package and put on ice. So it's a really simple and streamlined process.
And never frozen.
Never frozen. That's key because that's where the quality comes in. You know, all if we freeze it, all of a sudden we're competing with a lot of those imports and we're right next to everybody else on the market shelves.
Huh? Want to give us a quick overview of the shrimp market worldwide and kind of, okay, if you're buying at the local grocery store, what are you getting?
Yeah, so most shrimp is produced in Southeast Asia and a little bit in Central America as well. Most of that is going to be produced in ponds, so outdoor for the grow-out period, and will be imported frozen. So you're not, because shrimp has a relatively short shelf life, you're not going to really find fresh shrimp outside of what comes from the Gulf. So you're talking about lower quality frozen product is kind of what the current alternative for Iowans today.
And one of the problems with shrimp production in Thailand, for example, is that to create these seawater lagoons where they're growing them or ponds, they have had the farming industry for shrimp in Thailand, for example, has had a really destructive impact because they tear out these mangroves, which now mangroves are a species of plant that's kind of tree-like and they grow along a lot of coastal areas and they act as breeding grounds for other fish, as certainly buffers against storm and things like that. So in reducing the, and significantly, this is kind of like the overgrowth of palm forests and stuff. You're destroying a lot of the natural ecosystem to put in these shrimp farms in Thailand, for example. So some of the packaging that you'll see on products, all kinds of seafood, but particularly on shrimp, in our local supermarkets, you know, some of them will have sort of seafood sustainability labels on them saying, okay, this farm shrimp did not come from a place that's been environmentally destructive, but the whole industry is rife with these issues. So getting a sustainable product is a big deal.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Exactly what you said. When it comes to these imports, like they're largely in unregulated environments with the governments where they're coming from. So there's habitat, like coastal habitat destruction, as you mentioned, but there's also unethical labor practices. Mm-hmm. Is a huge deal. A lot of these ponds will leach their ground into the groundwater, so it creates unsafe drinking water for local populations as well as further pollution to the habitat surrounding these ponds. And then there's also, because they're freezing the shrimp and then importing, there's like a lot of disease pressure, so they're treating with antibiotics. And the last thing, in addition to all of that, is that there's a lot of chemical additives too that sneak in there for preservation. So it's really important to buy sustainable and to be conscientious because, you know, if you don't know where your seafood's coming from, it can come from some pretty sad places.
It's always good to know where our food comes from and what the food eats. Evidently from saying where shrimp are grown, usually Thailand or whatever, Iowa is a bit on the northern temperature range of where you'd find shrimp, which is why you have to take care of the temperature. What sort of temperatures do the shrimp need, and what do you feed these little things?
Yeah, so we maintain in our tanks 82 degrees, so they're quite warm. And really, that's key part of that is Iowa's a really good spot from an energy perspective. We've put a lot of development dollars in things like wind and natural gas pipelines and that kind of thing that provides a lot of opportunities cost-wise. On the feed side, we currently buy we're not in the feed production side, but we buy standard shrimp diets actually out of Pennsylvania. But there's a lot of opportunities, a lot of interesting things happening in the shrimp feed side, as far as sustainability, and the industry continues to make strides and has made strides for producing sustainable aquaculture diets, which we're happy to be a customer of.
So what's in a feed mix for shrimp currently?
Yeah, so traditionally a fish feed would have been made with fish meal and fish oil as the two main ingredients. Kind of what changed in what had changed was is that soybean meal inclusion, which is obviously a product we have a lot of in Iowa, has increased quite a bit. Mm-hmm. But we're kind of almost hitting another wave that adds a lot of diversity to these diets. There's a lot of single cell protein products that are grown on waste, algae meals, that kind of thing. Insect meal is actually another one that's coming. So it's actually adding a lot of diversity, and a lot of these products are bringing a lot of sustainability and very interesting concepts.
Yeah, we've talked a little bit about insect products, and I think it's a great way to go. We had a girl on who locally raises crickets, and they tasted pretty good.
Well, cricket shrimp, yeah, they're all these legged things. This is good. Well, tell us how much. Well, I walked into your business, and I consider this huge tank and your huge setup pretty big. Can you give me some idea of the space required for this startup of your shrimp experiment here? Yeah, how big?
Yeah, so our first commercial grow-out tank is 22,000 gallons. So it is 50 foot long and 15 foot wide. So we only actually use only 5,000 square feet currently, which is it's a decent amount. But in 2021, we hope to expand to use an additional 20,000 square feet.
You're going to build 12 tanks of that size? That's your next goal?
Yep, 12 additional tanks. That's correct.
I want to mention again that this is inside of the old outlet mall up in Story City. And I can't think of a better place. They talk about being able to temperature control an area, actually having a already prepared floor and ceilings and all like that. How did you end up there? Did you look at other possible setups or building your own? I think it'd be expensive if you build your own. How did you decide on the outlet mall as a place to start your farm?
Yeah, so we looked at a lot of options, kind of looking for space and certainly keeping cost in mind because mm-hmm. we wanted to be able to invest most of our dollars into the equipment and the systems, not into the building. But along that path, we met the current owner of that building, Accurate Development, who's in residential and commercial and real estate construction. And we ended up partnering with them on this startup and kind of bringing them in as partners. And they've been great so far of really helping this project come along.
Well, let's talk about, so you, Lon and I had a little sample for dinner last night, and we want to certainly let our audiences know how to cook shrimp. And the number one rule is do not overcook it.
Yes.
Yeah, do you have some things to say about that, Sarah?
Sure, yeah. So our product is head on, shell on, and we encourage everybody to keep the head on and the shell on when you're cooking the shrimp. And the reason behind that is that a lot of the flavor is in the head, like in the pocket of the head. A lot of those juices will infuse into the meat when you're cooking it, which gives it that really nice, rich lobster-like flavor that is just, you just can't even compare it to frozen stuff. Like I had frozen shrimp the other day and it just tasted like so bland to me after our cardboard shrimp so long.
I think it tasted like cocktail sauce.
Yeah, we covered cocktail sauce on it.
Talk about a Midwestern taste. I mean, you're talking about Midwestern customers here, and that was I think most people's introduction to shrimp is drop it in that, what is it, horseradish and?
ketchup and horseradish.
There you go.
It's cocktail sauce. Well, I mean, the other rule about shrimp, if you're going to have good shrimp with serious flavor profile, is shrimp has a very subtle flavor. So you don't want to cover up the flavor if you have really good shrimp. What I did last night was I just put a little saucepan on and I got the water boiling, and then I dropped the shrimp in, and maybe 1 minute, 1.5 minutes. You do not walk away from the stove, because here's the always thing to remember with asparagus too. If you undercook it, you can go back in a little bit. Once you have overcooked it, it is done. And they can turn into rubber really, really fast. So, have you had to educate your customers about how to appreciate this product?
Yeah, education is key, and it's something that we're going to be developing more. Like, we anticipate of having on our website, like, a lot of detailed cooking instructions with, like, drop-down menus that will tell you how to boil the shrimp and how to bake the shrimp and how to saute the shrimp, how to fry the shrimp, just going into everything, because, you know, it's a simple product at the end of the day, you know, because just how delicious it is. My favorite way is to have it in butter. Just that's it. Sauteed in butter, done.
So
that's my favorite way. But, you know, once you start getting into the other stuff, it can get complicated, especially when people aren't familiar with the product and they're not used to deshelling or deheading. So,
well, I must say we deshell, we left the tail and the head on, but we did deshell before we put them in the boiling water. And I think it would be easier. You're right. Just cook it with the whole thing on, yeah, and then peel it. 'Cause they were a little tricky to cut the shell off while they were still raw. So what we did last night was we just boiled them in plain water, and I wouldn't even call it a boil. It was almost just like a little quick simmer. And then on the plate, I had squeezed fresh lemon juice and some olive oil. So then we just dropped them onto the plate, put a little salt on it, and boom, that was it. Because you, yeah, don't want to cover up that sweet shrimp flavor that you get at the first part of the bite.
Exactly. So I'm from New Hampshire originally, so I'm a seafood eater, and we made the mistake for our last harvest where we made a shrimp roll, which is similar to a lobster roll. I'm not sure if you're familiar with lobster rolls, but it's just, yeah, a hot dog bun, a chock full of lobster, mayo, a little bit of celery, and that's pretty much it, and it is delicious. So our shrimp are very lobster-esque in their flavor, so I thought, oh, mm-hmm, let's make a lobster roll with shrimp. But the thing was that our flavor is just so delicate, and, you know, it's not exactly subtle. I mean, it's a really rich flavor, but it's easy to cover up. And that's what I noticed. It was like, well, we might as well have just, you know, used just grocery store shrimp if we were going to do this. So that was one mistake that I've made. And so I'm careful to tell people not to cover up the flavor.
I'm glad you come from a seafood, we have some seafood experience, because here we are in Iowa, and seafood in general is kind of like foreign food here.
Well, yeah, and a lot of people say, oh, I just don't know how to cook fish.
Yeah, yes.
Well, the first thing is keep it simple, stupid,
yeah,
kind of thing. So that's probably going to be a big messaging point for you.
Yeah, and shrimp is easier too, because it is the number one most consumed seafood in the United States. So people are a lot more comfortable with it than other fish products and stuff like that. So it's something that's familiar to them, and you know, and they value the quality of it too. So it's been pretty easy for us from a marketing perspective.
Oh, good for you. Good for you. We are talking about seafood. Seafood actually grown here in Iowa. I guess we have to talk about the definition of seafood, but we are talking with Jackson and Sarah Kimley, who have Midland Seafood Company, a new great venture. We're going to take a little bit of station break here and come back and talk more to Jackson and Sarah. You are listening to KHOI. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen, Tasty Radio for the heart of Iowa. Welcome back. This is the Donalana Kitchen. We're talking to Jackson and Sarah Kinley today. Yes, we are. We're talking about growing shrimp in Iowa. And yes, these folks can do it.
So, Jackson, yesterday when we were touring your facility, you talked a little bit about ag innovation and where shrimp farming fits into this historically. You want to go over that a little bit with us?
Yeah, so I guess kind of from my perspective, Iowa's done a good job in agriculture and as a state kind of looking for what's next and what's the, excuse me, the next industry. So Iowa kind of transitioned to indoor pork production and kind of modernizing that, and that's become a huge industry for the state and a huge revenue driver. Then after that, we brought in renewable ethanol kind of as a next push and have built out a significant amount. And then wind has probably been the most recent to bring another renewable fuel. I see aquaculture as kind of an opportunity to be something that's next. We buy $7 billion in the United States of shrimp every year.
Wow.
But why not produce that here, at least a portion of that, and really provides an opportunity for the state to bring in a new industry for all species, not just shrimp.
And do you feel like this idea of ag innovation was fostered at your ISU education?
Yeah, I certainly learned a lot through both the teachers and the students I was with. Mm-hmm. And maybe I'm a weird learner. I learned a lot through the experiences and kind of the after class activities, kind of where you're talking. And
well, that's what we got in Iowa, right?
yeah. And so I certainly learned a lot through all those experiences and who I met and all that.
Well, now, so your future vision is not just selling shrimp, but also helping other farmers to become shrimp farmers. And you talked about your business being grown as a contracting farmers. You want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, so our next 12 tanks on our expansion later this year will be a model or a demonstration for what we envision and what we'd like to be able to bring to farmers who are interested in diversifying here in the state of Iowa with a different investment, kind of different labor on their farm. So we kind of see it kind of hitting a copy paste, mentioned it that way, and kind of bringing an opportunity. We'd like to do it in similar fashion to what's been successful in the state. We've had really good luck in the poultry and swine industries with providing similar opportunities to farmers. So I think we can use a lot of what already works and kind of build on that.
Well, but you do have the advantage in your system of not having to go through the slaughtering process, which is for farmers, but in both poultry and in pork, that is an external function. So with the shrimp, you harvest in your facility, basically, right?
Yeah, so our processing and packaging is really simple right now.
Mm-hmm.
And customers, there's a lot of advantages to head on. And it certainly depends on which customer base you're working with, on if that works for them, whether it's restaurants or direct to consumer. There's a lot of advantages with direct to consumer with head-on product, and provides a lot of opportunity there. And simplification of getting shrimp from a tank to somebody's mouth, fresh and delicious.
We noticed when we visited your facility yesterday, you caught some shrimp. They were swimming around and you dipped a net in. But I thought, well, if you're feeling a big order, I don't suppose you stand there with one net and dip forever. How does one get like pounds at a time when you get your business ramped up to that
right.
Level?
Describe your harvesting process.
How do you get them out of the tank?
That's a great question. It's something that we're still figuring out, but we have a method that we've been using.
Yeah, so currently in that tank, in our first commercial tank, we generally use crowding with a net to crowd them and then to pull them out in that fashion. what we'll probably do in our future tanks is you can drain a tank down so the water level's low, and then that makes it much easier to harvest.
Put them in a smaller pen.
This is a lot of water, folks. Like, imagine, I mean, these are big, big tanks, and when you finally get 12 of them, it's going to be pretty amazing. How many, do you have employees to help you do this? This is going to be an amazing, amazing process.
Yeah, we've got a really good technical team that does good work and has done a great job developing this technology and the management needed for us to start getting shrimp to customers. So they deserve a lot of credit, Matt and Chad, on the work they've done so far.
Great. So on a daily basis, obviously you have to manage, this is a salt water based system, so you have to manage the salinity, the temperature. What other kinds of things are you checking on all the time?
Yeah, so when you get in, I guess if you kind of put yourself in kind of the farmer shoes. So if you're farming shrimp, what do you do? What does a morning look like? So when you first arrive, you're going to check that the systems are running. Pumps are running. Everything's operating correctly. You're getting good flow. And that the shrimp look good. And looking at how they look. So sampling would be kind of what some people refer to it as. Number two, you're going to work on water quality. So you're going to do testing, analysis, and see what water quality looks like and make sure it looks optimal for the shrimp. And that will dictate kind of what you do from there. And then finally, you'll feed the shrimp and based off what you saw in those two previous parts of your daily chores. But it's a lot of detail orientation in shrimp production because everything's a symbiotic system. And you need the algae and shrimp and water chemistry to all be working together to provide the best environment.
What do you do if there's a power outage?
So for us, you have to have a generator.
Because it can't go without power, right?
That's correct.
How long would it take to lose the whole thing? Like 10 minutes or something?
So we'd have a little bit longer than that, but the way we do things, the number one thing if you have a power outage is to take them off feed and then to make sure they have enough oxygen. So if you do those two things, you can go a significant amount of time without it being too big a deal. But you need to do those two main tasks.
Good.
So that would.
Does this aquaculture system, could you grow other fish sort of things in this kind of system?
Yeah, so in our pilot trials, we actually did run a study where we grew rainbow trout, kind of thinking about whether our system made sense to grow steelhead trout or maybe coho salmon or something like that. We did have really good results in that study. That being said, we're focused on shrimp, because it's a big market opportunity and our customers like it. So
yeah.
We don't have any plans at the moment to do anything else.
We talk about it. I mean, we talk about oysters and all the other good stuff. So I'm looking
for oysters.
Yeah. I'm encouraging them to explore other things.
Well, now if a farmer is interested, like compare the cost of setting up a shrimp farm versus setting up a CAFO with pork.
Yeah, so I could be, what I remember from talking to hog producers, and I could be wrong, but I think it's around $750,000 dollar investment to start up.
Yeah,
for the farmer. We're currently looking at $1.5 to $2 million investment for contract growers. So kind of like building two barns or two sites, but really following a similar model.
But you said on the shrimp model, the payback time is much shorter than, for example, the swine operation.
Yeah, so swine operations, I think, are at 15-year cash payback, is my understanding. We're talking about much faster. There's a lot of opportunity for profitability in shrimp production. We'll produce it here.
But you guys as a company are kind of on the proving edge of that, right?
Yeah, so before we bring anything to a farmer, we want to be comfortable with it first. So we're taking that risk up front. before going to the farmers. And I think that's really a key for being successful. And if you think about it from a farmer's perspective, he's going to have to sit down with his banker, and him and his banker are going to have to be comfortable. So if we have a facility running in Story City that looks very similar to what he'll build, we can show what it's produced, what the financials look like. I think that's just going to be easier for everyone.
So in your business model, you're going to be, in a lot of ways, talking to the bankers and helping facilitate that kind of financing, because that's a major investment for a farmer.
Yeah, for sure. All the resources we can do to make the analysis for bankers as easy as possible. So they'll not just be looking at kind of that facility, they'll be looking at Midland, they'll be looking at the farmers' finances. It really needs to be a holistic approach for financing these.
Are you the only shrimp producer in the Midwest? I'm sure there's other people that are doing aquaculture. Are there many people doing this sort of thing?
There are other shrimp producers. There's a couple projects that are large. There's a few projects that are small. So there's certainly other people who are looking at the opportunity as well.
Are you in stiff competition, or do you guys get to compare notes?
So I like to share what we're learning. So we try to patent our secret sauce or build intellectual property there and then just share everything. Because mm-hmm. from our perspective, being able to share as an industry and learn from each other is quite the opportunity. It needs to be two ways. But where other people have been open to it, we've shared what we've seen, what our struggles and successes have been.
Oh, good. So your plan, you talked about your plans for growth as far as growing the facility. It's going to be pretty amazing to have a shrimp farm here in central Iowa. But how do you plan on growing a market? You say what you harvest now goes to individual people who are hungry for shrimp, which is good. But who else are you going to try to sell all these shrimp to?
So right now it is super simple. We're just selling direct to consumer. I mean, at this stage we're operating like a small business, even though we have these really large ambitions and goals for our business for the hub and spoke contract grower model. So it's all direct to consumer. We have a wait list on our website where people can sign up and they drive straight up to our facility and we sell the shrimp there when it's their turn on the wait list. We have a huge demand and not enough supply right now. Saying that, we've been really impressed with how much the community has gathered around us and supported us and how much of an interest there is in our product. We weren't expecting it to have this many people signed up on our wait list. So for the future, we're looking to keep that direct to consumer model probably, and we'll work on shipping the product. And we have this fantastic partner that we just developed a partnership with called Chop Local. They're also a local company based out of Iowa that's a startup growing alongside us. And they are offering a variety of other proteins and meats on their website. So it's kind of like an online marketplace where there's all of these storefronts of these niche producers where a customer can come and they can look and peruse. They can get some steak. They can get some shrimp and have a surf and turf night. And it's really convenient and no cost to the customer. So we're going to be growing alongside them and hopefully you know, we can do direct to consumer with them far into the future. And who knows, maybe all, you know, 15 years out from now, all 400 contract grower facilities that we have will be doing direct to consumer nationwide. Who knows? So
say the name of that website again.
So our partner is Chop Local, and I believe it's choplocal.com, right? I think so.
choplocal.com, right?
Yeah, it's like Shop Local, except Chop, because it's meat.
Ah, so it's all Iowa product then?
Yes, all local Iowa right. products. They got some bacon, they have steaks, they have a little bit of everything on there right now.
Good. And give us your website too.
Ours is midlandseafood.com.
Good.
We kept it broad because I really do want to produce other types of seafood.
Good. That's fine.
So you harvest like once a month, basically?
Right now, it's every couple of months. It's not super consistent because we're just testing out the systems and playing around with it right now as we're developing that technology. But it's around every couple of months right now.
Okay. So people have to wait to get your shrimp.
Yeah, they have to be patient, which has been really hard for a lot of people.
Well, I suppose it's sort of like an adoption process. If you want the shrimp, you get on the list and then boom, you pick it up right when they're ready, right?
Yeah, we email a couple of weeks out in advance and confirm those orders, you know, get all the details ready for them and make sure that they still want the shrimp. And then we coordinate that pickup and yeah. So we give them a couple weeks heads up.
Well, it's certainly exciting to have toured your facility and to meet two young Iowa food entrepreneurs. And thank you so much for the work that you do. And we look forward to following your story, as it were. And good luck to you.
Yes.
Thank you. And thank you so for having us.
Thanks. Great. Was Jackson and Sarah Kinley, and they are Iowa farmers. They are growing shrimp for us, Midland Seafood Company. This is KHOI 89.1. This is Community Radio, and you are listening to the Donalana Kitchen. You can find out more at khoifm.org. We're moving from winter to spring, and the trees are waking up. Here's a tune called Maple Syrup Time, and you don't get to play that very often because that's a short window of opportunity. But yes, people do maple syrup here in Iowa, and this tune goes out to Ben and Emily Rose and all the rest of you who this time of year do the hard work of bringing us sweetness of maple syrup.
Buckets are ready, clean the pans and gather firewood late in the winter. It's maple syrup time. You need warm and sunny days, but still a cold and freezing nighttime for just a few weeks. Maple syrup time. We boil and boil and boil and boil it all night long, till 97% of water evaporates, just like the song. And what is left is syrupy, don't leave it too long. Keep up the fire, maple syrup time. Well, I know it's not the quickest system, but each year I can't resist it. Get out the buckets and tap the trees in time. Making it is half the fun and satisfaction when it's done. So keep up the fire, maple syrup time. Well, my grandpa says perhaps it's just a waste of time. Ah, but no more than this attempt to make a happy little rhyme. So swing your tail or tap your feet, but keep in good time. Keep up the fire, maple syrup time.
We are back. That was a little ode to maple syrup. That tune was written originally by Pete Seeger. A lot of people play it now. And even Pete Seeger himself could not tell you why that tune ended up as sort of a calypso beat thing, but it does. That maple syrup just goes with that. And also, that was performed by a band called the Olga Symphony from a little island off the coast of Washington State called Orca Island. A bunch of musicians out there got a little tired just watching the waves, and they do some good music out there. The Olga Symphony. Yeah, thinking more about spring, I have a poem to share here. Thinking about the birds coming back, and this time of year, majestic geese come over. I think
lots of them.
Well, they hang around because of Ada Hayden Park here, but other geese, they do come back from their summer grounds and they're heading north. And here's a little poem by the poet Mary Oliver. It's about joy. It's about geese, and it's about finding our place in the world. Wild Geese by Mary Oliver. You don't have to be good. You don't have to walk on your knees for hundreds of miles through the desert repenting. You only have to let the soft animal of your body love what it loves. Tell me about despair, yours, and I will tell you mine. Meanwhile, the world goes on. Meanwhile, the sun, the clear pebbles of the rain are moving across the landscape, over the prairies and deep trees, the mountains and rivers. Meanwhile, the wild geese, high in the clean blue air, are heading home again. Whoever you are, no matter how lonely, the world offers itself to you in your imagination. It calls to you like the wild geese, harsh and exciting, over and over announcing your place in the family of things. Here, a little thought about spring and geese. And yeah, it's so nice to hear them honking again.
Oh, yeah. And we got the woodpeckers and the cardinals.
They're coming back. Yep. I think geese kind of, I've heard that they do kind of come back to the same place. Sort of every year, or at least nest kind of in the same place. And they are pretty much monogamous. Pairs stay together, sort of. And for years, there's been a pair that's been kind of dive bombing my farm. I know there's lots of other around, but these two kind of come low. And I know they spend time on our neighbor's pond, and they've also spent some time sitting on top of our house. So I'm getting kind of fond of those new geese. And I've been, over the years, I've called them Gertrude and Heathcliff. And I've been able to say, welcome back, Gertrude and Heathcliff. You're here this year. Things are good. Well, we've got an upcoming event to talk about, Donna.
Yeah, a few shows ago, we had Helen Gunderson on talk about the book that she has written called The Road I Grew Up On, Requiem for a Vanishing Era. And Helen is an Iowa girl. She grew up in Black Hawk County. And so she has taken the time to write about a lot of the different people on the road that she grew up in. And as a picture snapshot of what, you know, rural life used to be like. And any of us that grew up in this area or other rural areas, like I grew up in Western Illinois, Lana grew up in, is it the middle of Wisconsin?
South Central.
South Central, right. So these stories were all really familiar to us, and I'm really glad Helen took the time to write about it, because life is not quite the same way it was, you know, 50 or 70 years ago. So Helen is having an event. It's called A Virtual Conversation with the Author, and also included in that conversation is Dr. Cornelia Flora, who's our local, very well-known rural sociologist. So it should be a really interesting conversation. Is tomorrow from 6 to 7 p.m., March 24th. And to find out more how to log on to it, go to Helen's website, which is www.gunderfriend.com. So that's tomorrow evening at 6 to 7 with Helen Gunderson and Dr. Cornelia Flora. I look forward to it.
Yes, yes. Well, Donna, speaking of seafood, and what we talk about, Iowans don't know what to do with fish, okay? We have a little pizza party out at my place, and you brought some wonderful pizza topping, but you said the stuff you brought works good for lots of different things. Tell me about anchovies.
Oh, anchovies. Okay, anchovies, you know, you get them in a can or a jar. They're little tiny fish, and they usually come quite salted. And one of my favorite things to do, and actually even children, people kind of look at an anchovy and they kind of go, meh. But if you put some olive oil in a pan, like a, you know, just a little cast iron skillet, and then you put the on low heat, right? Not high heat, put the anchovies in and smash them with the back of a fork. The fish shape completely disappears, and what you are left with is just a yummy, umami, salty flavor. For example, fish sauce, which is a, you know, staple of all kinds of Southeast Asian food, is basically anchovies in kind of in their stewed in their own juice. So if I just take a little jar of anchovies, put some olive oil in, smash them down, put some garlic in and a little salt and pepper. We were using that, brush it on the pizza crust as a base for the pizza crust. It's also really, really good as a dipping sauce for bread. And if you throw a little bit of vinegar in it, also that perks it up. It's really good. It's almost, there is a, there's an Italian dish called bagna caldo, which is a heated up mixture of mostly the same things, anchovies, olive oil, garlic. And the classical way of serving it is you take a platter of either blanched or raw vegetables and you're dipping it into this sauce. So as a dipping sauce, I highly recommend this use of anchovies, and even children love it. It's just yummy.
And what's nice is after we used it on the pizza, it was this little jar of stuff left, and just adding it, I added it to pasta a few days ago.
Oh, yeah, really, really easy.
And, you know, and who says Iowans don't eat fish? I like fish. Well,
a quick and easy thing for a spring pasta was, okay, I would think probably within 2 weeks, the garlic chives will be up all over, and they're mostly wild. People think they're weeds, but they're delicious to eat. I go out and chop a bunch of them off. I mean, a lot of them, and just throw them into some freshly cooked pasta. And if you put that anchovy sauce on that with the garlic chives, that would be delicious.
Very good. So let's think of good spring things. And don't forget fish. Fish are good. And shrimp. Shrimp in Iowa. Iowa shrimp is not an oxymoron anymore. No, it's not. There's the Midland Seafood Company, and we wish them well. You've been listening to the Donalana Kitchen. Music today by the Olga Symphony, a band from Washington State. The Olga Symphony. We'll go out with a tune called the Ook-Pick Waltz.
Oh, wait. Did you tell people how to get Ben's maple syrup?
Oh, Ben's. Go to Front Yard Sugar. Google Front Yard Sugar if you're up for some maple sugar.
Some local maple syrup.
Front Yard Sugar. Oh, there you go. Anyway, music today by the Olga Symphony. We'll go out with the Ook-Pick Waltz. Support this fine community radio station. My name is Lana Nachtigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
We had excellent engineering as usual by Mike Murphy. Eat good food and enjoy life.
Thank you.
is Lana Noptigal from the Donna Lana Kitchen, and I'm here to tell you to wear a mask during these strange times. Wear a mask, keep your distance, wash your hands, stay home if you're ill, and be kind to each other.